Welcome to a very special Super Bowl edition of the Rams Wire podcast. Thank you for tuning in. We've got a lot to get to today, previewing the matchup between the Rams and Patriots in Super Bowl 53. But before we get to that, make sure you follow me on Twitter at Cam DeSilva, and you can follow the Rams Wire on Twitter at The Rams Wire. So we're going to talk about the matchup between Mecole Roby Coleman and Julian Edelman, the matchup between John Johnson and Rob Gronkowski, how Dante Fowler is kind of a dark horse MVP candidate, the battle between Sean McVay and Bill Belichick with all of the comparisons between their ages, their experience in the big game, and then we'll talk about DeSean Jackson's comments about wanting to play for the Rams at some point, even though he's under contract for 2019 with the Buccaneers. So we'll get right into it, talk about some of the biggest matchups in this game, ones that I think are probably going to determine which team wins and which team loses. Most of them come with regard to the passing game because, after all, the NFL is a passing league. But the first one that I'm looking at, and I've talked about it all week, be it on the Rams Wire, on radio appearances, it's Mecole Roby Coleman against Julian Edelman. So everyone's talking about the fact that Roby Coleman has been in the news for his comments on Tom Brady, for the hit on Tommy Lee Lewis in the NFC Championship game. Obviously, that was pass interference. We're not even going to discuss that. He's going to be a huge factor in this game in the Super Bowl. He's going to draw the assignment of covering Edelman in the slot, who, of course, as everyone knows, is Tom Brady's favorite target. He was critical for in the Patriots' win over the Chiefs, converted multiple third downs with big catches over the middle. He's just automatic when it comes to the timing between him and Brady. Roby Coleman's going to have his hands full with that matchup, and if the Rams can't cover him with single coverage, they're going to have to devote a linebacker to the middle of the field to kind of take away those slants and those quick crossers to Edelman over the middle. That's going to be a huge part of this game, and whether or not Mecole Roby Coleman can handle the shifty wide receiver, it's going to determine how the Rams approach the rest of the Patriots' offense with regards to the secondary and the linebacker unit. So that's a matchup I'm definitely looking forward to. And if you flip it over on the other side, Brandon Cooks against Stephon Gilmore is one of the better matchups in this game too. Cooks obviously has experience with Stephon Gilmore, having played with the Patriots last year, so they know each other well. And Gilmore has played his best football this season for the Patriots. He was Pro Football Focus's number one cornerback. By every measure, he was pretty much the best corner in the league. And now he's going to draw the assignment, probably, of Brandon Cooks, who has outstanding speed. Gilmore can run with him, but Gilmore is not as shifty and quick in those short areas the way that Brandon Cooks is. So maybe rather than attacking over the top, Rams are going to use Brandon Cooks over the middle on these quick outs and in these shorter passes. But saying that, you also have to mention the fact that the Patriots are susceptible to big plays downfield. They shut down Tyreek Hill and did a good job there. But they have given up some big plays in the passing game. So that's an area where Sean McVay is definitely going to try to attack it with play-action passes and all these flood passing routes and all these crossers across the middle of the field to kind of try to disrupt this defense and throw them off a little bit. Next, you got Aaron Donald against Joe Tooney. Tooney's one of the better young offensive guards in the league. He's going to be at that left guard position against Donald. You can't leave anyone blocking Donald one-on-one. I don't care if he's the best guard in the league, like Zach Martin or anyone in that regard. You got to put two people on him for most of the game, and I'm sure that's what the Patriots are going to do, which opens up things for Dominican Sue, for Michael Brockers, and for Dante Fowler. So depending on how they attack Donald, that's going to have a big impact on the rest of the Rams' defensive line. On the other side of the ball, the Rams' offensive line against that Patriots front is going to be crucial. The Patriots have 6 sacks in the last 2 games in the postseason, so they've really gotten after the quarterback in the past 2 games after only having 30 sacks in the regular season, which was the second fewest in the NFL. So the Rams' offensive line has played really well lately, only allowing 7 hits on Jared Goff in the past 2 games, but they're going to have their hands full against that defensive front with Trey Flowers and Dante Hightower and Kyle Van Noy, both as blitzers and run defenders. Defensively, Corey Littleton against James White is a matchup that I'm also looking at. Alvin Kamara he had 11 catches for 96 yards in that NFC Championship game. Most of that came with Littleton in coverage, and it was clear that the Rams just couldn't keep him on that shifty running back, and it's going to be probably a similar story on Sunday against James White, who is one of the better pass-catching running backs in the league. So rather than giving him handoffs and running outside with him, the Patriots tend to give him these checkdowns and these out routes out of the backfield to get him open against linebackers and matched up against slower defenders. So that's a matchup that the Rams really have to be worried about, because you have Sony Michel and Rex Burkhead who can run the ball successfully inside, but then you also have to worry about James White when he's in the game as a receiver. Another pass catcher, of course, is Rob Gronkowski. You're probably going to have John Johnson on him for at least the initial part of the game to see how that goes. I wrote a lengthy piece breaking down the film on how the Rams can attack Gronk, and I'll get into that in a little while. But really, it's going to come down to whether Johnson can handle him one-on-one, or if they're going to have to go to a bracket coverage with an underneath defender, or if they're going to try to put a cornerback on him, like maybe Aqib Talib. But like I said, I'll get to that in a little bit here. Todd Gurley against the Patriots linebackers. I already mentioned Dante Hightower and Kyle Van Noy. The way that the Patriots operate to take away that outside zone running game, they like to spread the defensive line out and allow those linebackers to fill the gaps and fill the holes. And it's risky because if someone gets out of position, it could go for a long game, but you also take away that outside running game and limit the Rams to possibly just running it inside more often, which could lead to more C.J. Anderson. We'll see how the Patriots approach that and how Sean McVay decides to kind of use this two-headed monster in the backfield. And that brings me to the last matchup of Sean McVay and Bill Belichick. McVay being 33 years old, he obviously doesn't have as much experience as Bill Belichick does, who is now entering his 9th Super Bowl as a head coach of the Patriots. He's twice the age of McVay. It's really going to be a chess match between these guys. Belichick being such a defensive guru, you might see him come out in a 4-3 in the beginning of the game and switch to a 3-4 in the second half just to throw things off. How he defends Jared Goff and switches up the looks before the play clock runs down. There's a lot of interesting ways that Belichick can defend this Rams offense, but really I'm looking at how Sean McVay attacks the Patriots defense. Is he going to go with more play action? Is he going to go to the outside zone run, which has been a staple of the offense all season long, but now with Gurley being kind of disappearing in these last 2 games, do you lean more heavily on C.J. Anderson, who has that Super Bowl experience, who can run inside? So that's something that I'm kind of watching to see how this chess match between those guys plays out. But going back to Gronk against Johnson, and kind of overall how the Rams are going to defend Gronk in the middle of the field at tight end, there's a few ways they can play this. You got John Johnson, who was shaky in week 1 against the Raiders. Jared Cook had 9 catches, 180 yards, made a lot of big plays with Johnson in coverage. But then you also have games against Zach Ertz and these better tight ends where he really locked down. Trey Burton didn't have a big game against the Rams. So there's no denying that Johnson has a ton of talent. It's just whether he can hold up for 60, 70, 80 plays against Gronk, both as a blocker, both in the passing game, as a pass catcher. So that's something that the Rams are going to have to look at and decide how they want to approach it. And Wade Phillips, I wouldn't be surprised if he pays more attention to Gronk than most other coaches do, whether it's with a defender underneath or if you simply just put Johnson on him. Johnson, I would say, is option number 1. Number 2, maybe Aqib Talib. That leaves you susceptible to the wide receivers, though, because then you have either Troy Hill covering Chris Hogan, Marcus Peters covering Philip Dorsett. The top matchup between the receivers and corners is obviously Roby Coleman and Edelman. But if you take Tlaib out of that cornerback position and essentially make him a safety where he's covering Gronk in the middle of the field, he might get into some trouble. Tlaib has shown he can hold up against tight ends. He did a little bit against Zach Ertz against the Eagles. So he does have the size. He's actually bigger than Johnson at 6'1". But it depends on whether you want to take him out of that cornerback slot and really turn him into a safety, which I'm not sure you want to do. And then the other option really is to put a linebacker on him, which I don't think is really the best approach. We've seen Mark Barron try to cover tight ends. We've seen Corey Littleton try to cover guys like George Kittle. It just doesn't work very well. And you can find that piece. I'll link it here in the post for the podcast, where you can see that it just doesn't work out well for them. So if you do put a linebacker on him, I would expect it to be somewhat of a bracket coverage where you have Johnson or Joyner over the top to take away passes over the underneath defender and kind of almost double team him. It's especially the case in the red zone where you need to take away that big body and that big target in the close quarters where Brady can simply just throw it up to him. And more often than not, Gronk comes down with it. Moving on to the Rams side specifically, you got the battle between Gurley and Anderson, and I shouldn't say it's a battle. It's more of just a timeshare in the backfield of who's gonna get more carries, who's gonna get more playing time. All week, Sean McVay has said he expects a big game from Gurley, and he expects him to kind of be the Todd Gurley that we all know and expect him to be. I don't think he's injured. He hasn't been on the injury report at all. If he is hurt, then Sean McVay's in some trouble for not listing him. So I can't imagine he is hurt. Maybe it's just soreness. I don't know. He didn't look like himself against the Saints, but against the Cowboys, he hit 15 miles an hour on his carries, more in that game than any other game this season. So the explosiveness is still there, and he can still break the big runs like we saw against Dallas. But it's about how the Rams want to attack this defense. If they don't feel good about going to the outside zone, then maybe they go with Anderson inside. If they feel like the Patriots are susceptible to runs off tackle, then you might see more of Gurley. Then again, you also have Gurley, who's a better receiver and probably a better pass blocker. So it's going to be a difficult balance, but it's something that the Rams definitely have to figure out how they want to attack this Patriots defense and what the best way to do that is, because right now there's a lot of questions in the backfield for the Rams, and whether it's Gurley or Anderson, you need to get this ground game going against a Patriots defense that has only allowed 60 rushing yards in the past two games. So there's a lot of questions there in the backfield, and how Sean McVay approaches this balance for the running backs is going to kind of set the tone for the offense, whether they're going to be ground and pound or if they're going to be more finesse and with that passing game and with Jared Goff and Todd Gurley catching passes out of the backfield. So something to watch there. I'm not exactly sure how it's going to play out, but I think you're definitely going to see more of Gurley than you did against the Saints, where he only had four carries and one catch. Getting to Brady is something that the Rams really have to focus on in this game. Whether it comes from inside with Aaron Donald or outside with Dante Fowler and Samson Ebukam, who didn't play much against the Saints, you got to get pressure on him, which is difficult because of the way that he operates and the way that he plays the quarterback position. He gets rid of the ball very quickly, hits his underneath receivers with great accuracy. So it makes it difficult to kind of get to him and put pressure on him when he gets rid of the ball so quickly. That puts a burden on the cornerbacks to maybe play some press coverage and slow down Brady's delivery and make him hold on to the ball a little bit longer. Michael Brockers has talked about shutting down the run before they can even rush the passer, so that's going to be a focus as well. But when you look at Brady's numbers against interior pressure, his passer rating is only 63.1, and when he gets pressured from the edge, his passer rating is 118.7, so that's well above average, and he obviously handles edge pressure well. He likes to step up in the pocket and drive the football down the field rather than getting a guy like Aaron Donald coming into his lap up the middle where he doesn't have that lateral quickness to avoid the rush the way that other quarterbacks like Deshaun Watson, Marcus Mariota, Russell Wilson can. So getting that interior pressure is going to be crucial against Brady. In the past, I think, 5 Super Bowls, he's been hit an average of about 8 times per Super Bowl. So the Eagles, the Seahawks, the Falcons, they've all gotten pressure on him and hit him. Not that it's made a huge difference. He's still at 500 yards last year against the Eagles. But he's a difficult guy to get to, and the Rams might have the formula with Donald being such a pass rush artist inside. He gets to the quarterback quicker than almost anyone. It's just that's one area of the game where the Rams have to step up and they have to play good defense against him and get that interior pressure. That's not to say the Rams can't get pressure from the edges with Fowler, who has a good history against the Patriots. In the AFC Championship game last year, he had 2 sacks in week 2 against the Patriots. This year, he had another sack. He got to Brady a couple times with hits and pressures. So he does have a knack for getting to Brady and the Patriots. And with all the attention being paid on Donald and Sue, it does open up things for him outside with one-on-one matchups. And if he can take advantage of that against guys like Trent Brown and Marcus Cannon, it's going to go a long way towards them pressuring Brady. If he can get Brady to step up in the pocket, it'll bring Aaron Donald and Sue closer to the quarterback. So it all works works hand in hand as far as getting pressure on him and getting to the quarterback, where it's going to disrupt the timing of the offense. So Fowler's going to play a big role in this one. And I think, quite frankly, he is an underrated MVP candidate for the Super Bowl. Obviously, he's not the player that Von Miller is, but we saw Miller dominate against the Broncos or the Panthers that year in Super Bowl 50 and win MVP. I mean, if Fowler gets to Brady a couple of times, maybe forces a fumble, it's going to boost his stock. And if Brady doesn't have a strong game, someone on that defense could very well win MVP. And if Donald is slowed down a little bit, doesn't have a sack, he's not going to win it with just pressures. MVP is typically a numbers award where you're either making a huge play in the game or you're putting up big numbers. So Donald simply getting pressures and quarterback hits is not going to do enough for him to win MVP as much as it might impact the game. Whereas Fowler, if he forces a fumble or two and gets a couple of sacks, he's definitely an underrated candidate for MVP. He's one guy who has big game experience. That's not something that the Rams have much of. Comparing their Super Bowl experience, the Patriots have 36 guys who have played in a Super Bowl before, compared to the Rams, who have 4. Now, the Rams' 4 players who have played in a Super Bowl are C.J. Anderson, who played in 2, Aqib Talib, Brandon Cooks, and then you got Sam Shields, who is probably not going to do much of anything in this Super Bowl. So really, you're looking at 6 players who are going to play a role in this one who have been in a Super Bowl before. Brady by himself has played in 8 of them. This is his 9th one. So really, the comparison of experience it's a wash. I mean, I don't mean that saying it's not going to make a difference. I mean that as in it's a landslide. The Patriots have the advantage in experience in every level of this game, from coaching to defense to quarterback. You got Jared Goff, who only has 3 playoff games under his belt. His numbers, when you look at his regular season numbers in the past 3 years, they're worse than Brady's in just in the playoffs. So if you compare Brady's numbers in all of the postseason games that he's played, they're better, and they edge out Goff in his entire regular season career. Now, obviously, that's the case because Brady has played in all of these postseason games, and Goff only has 2.5 seasons of experience. But it just goes to show how often Brady is in these big games, is in the playoffs, and how little experience Jared Goff does have in these big games. Now, Brady, of course, has won MVP before in the Super Bowl. Goff is, I would say, one of the top candidates to do it because it is a quarterback's award. But in order to do that, he's going to have to avoid turnovers. He's going to have to make big time throws like he did against the Saints, where he's hitting Brandon Cooks down the left sideline. He's hitting Josh Reynolds, which probably should have been a touchdown on that wheel route down the left sideline again. So he's going to have to make throws like that, and like the one where he rolled out to his right and hit Gerald Everett for a huge gain. Those are the plays that fans are going to remember, and those are the plays that are going to help the Rams win this game, especially on third down. They're going to have to convert on third and sustain these drives, because when the Patriots win the turnover battle and the time of possession battle, they typically win the game. They doubled the Chiefs in plays. They had almost twice as much time of possession. So they really controlled that game, and even though it did go into overtime, the Chiefs had a hard time sustaining drives and going the length of the field to score touchdowns, whereas they're more of a quick strike offense the way that the Rams are. So the Rams might have to slow it down and go to the running game a little bit more rather than these quick strikes and this up-tempo, no-huddle offense. So that's certainly something to watch, because the Patriots are so good at controlling the clock. If they win the toss and they defer to the second half, they'll take the ball right before halftime, score a touchdown, and then come out of the break and score again and possibly put the game out of hand. So it's going to be important for the Rams to control the clock a little bit. That's not to say they have to slow it down completely, but they definitely have to be wary of the time of possession and not allowing Brady to be on the field for 80, 90 plays if this game does possibly go into overtime. One little note on the jersey choice. Obviously, a lot of people are talking about the fact that they can't buy the throwback jerseys with the Super Bowl patch. The team and NFL shop has really botched this situation and made it difficult for anyone to get sizes over youth. With regards to that, I think they're selling them at some pop-up shops, and they've said that they're going to be available after the Super Bowl. Hopefully they win the Super Bowl to make those jerseys worthwhile, but that's not a great situation. The Rams did choose to wear the throwbacks wisely, because they're the home team, so they got the first pick, and they chose to wear the throwbacks instead of their white jerseys. Looking at history, 12 of the last 14 teams to wear white have won the Super Bowl. And the only two teams to wear a different color were green when the Packers won, and then the Eagles won last year against the Patriots. So not good odds as far as that goes, but that's more of a superstition, I would say, than an actual trend or quantifiable stat. Lastly, I'm just going to touch on the DeSean Jackson thing. A lot of people were talking about it yesterday. On Wednesday, when Jackson was talking about how he would like to end up in LA with Sean McVay, kind of reunite with him. They spent time together in Washington. I don't see it. I don't see how Jackson fits in with this team. They have a speed guy in Brandon Cooks. They have four solid receivers in Cooks, Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, and then Josh Reynolds. I don't see how Jackson fits into this equation. Woods is not going anywhere, neither is Cooks or Kupp. Josh Reynolds, I think, has emerged as a good piece. So unless they trade him, DeSean Jackson would be the fifth receiver on this team. He's set to make $10 million in 2019 with the Buccaneers. I don't know if he's going to take a pay cut down to $4 million, $3 million, but I simply just don't see a way where Jackson fits in on this team. He had a chance to join the Rams in 2017. I'm not saying the Rams offered him anything, but he opted to sign with the Buccaneers, and he could have followed Sean McVay to the Rams after both of them left the Redskins in 2017. So I just don't see how he fits in with his team. I don't think the Rams are going to make any sort of play for him in 2020 when he is a free agent. It's just, I don't see it happening. So I don't think the Rams need a receiver. I think that's arguably their best position. So you can kind of put that thought of bringing DeSean Jackson to LA to rest, because the Rams really just don't need him, and they don't have the cap space to go out and sign a receiver who wants $10 million a year. So that's going to do it for today's episode. Everyone enjoy the Super Bowl. It's going to be a great game. Actually, before I sign off, I will give you guys a prediction. I'll have a write-up on Sunday morning about my final prediction, but I do think the Rams are going to win this game. I think it's going to be close. I'll break it down more in my write-up on the Rams Wire on Sunday. I have a ton of content up right now, along with my contributor Andrew Ortenberg. You can follow him at Andrew Oball on Twitter. So we've got the game covered. We've broken down how we think this one is going to play out. And like I said, I'm gonna write about it on Sunday and have a preview and prediction there. But I do think the Rams have a good shot at this game. I am predicting them to win. And so we'll see what happens. But enjoy the game. We'll have a recap next week on the Rams Wire podcast. Follow us on Twitter at the Rams Wire. I'm on Twitter at Cam DeSilva. Send me a message. Say what's up. So be sure to follow us on Twitter. And we'll talk to you guys next week after Super Bowl 53. Hopefully after a Rams win.